This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the WTR podcast. We're on episode 3 of the season. Just want to start by thanking everyone for listening to the last pod. Record-breaking numbers after a 4-0 defeat is quite mad. Like we say, misery like company. So look, quick thanks for everyone listening. The feedback, it's really great. But this week we wanted to jump on and do a podcast because we've got a lot of positive stuff to get through, which for us lads on the podcast has been non-existent, and we feel like we're repeating the same sort of stuff every week. So to have some good stuff to talk about, lads, it's going to be good. I want to see some smiling faces, yeah, some happy comments, yeah. just quickly, introduction we've got on the pod today. We've got Duncan, we've got Chris, and we've got Ollie. Proper stallions of the pods, have been on for a while. Ollie, welcome back, mate.
Good to be back, mate. And a positive return as well, which is lovely.
Yes. You love a negative view, so it'd be good to get a nice positive view from you today, mate.
Yeah, it feels a bit alien, but I'm ready.
Lads, we all right?
Yep, all good. Like, buzzing after the weekend, couldn't believe it.
Yeah, so... very happy that your mood on a Saturday evening is so much more enjoyable after a win, like especially for a win that you don't feel is coming. Yeah, after the week that everybody had and the overall kind of negativity and the therapy session that everyone experienced on the pod last week.
Honestly, it is mad, isn't it? When you get a win, like, and you're going out and you're seeing people, and your hellos are just so much better, and like, you can be bothered to talk to people, and like, you know, just everything's just, you know, happy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that person that, like, the small talk in work meetings, I'm sure we all were happy to do those at 9 o'clock this morning. Whereas last Monday, absolutely no chance. And the amount of people who would have mentioned the Watford game last week compared to QPR's win this week, yeah, different level completely.
Yeah, so quickly getting into Saturday then, what I wanted to quickly talk about, great result obviously, we'll get stuck into that in a second, was probably more around Ainsworth and his approach to the game. I listened to his, and I'm sure you all have, his post-match interview. It sounded like, and I don't know who he's had this conversation with, but it sounds like he's been in a dark room trying to figure out how and what he needs to do. And he's had this conversation with lots of people, and he's sort of come to terms with having to change the formation, change his approach, maybe even change the conversations or what he's asking the players to do. And that was quite evident on Saturday, especially with the formation. But it worked. I always find it's really difficult for Gareth Ainsworth, because how does he make us more solid, but also make us more of an attacking threat? It's such a difficult thing. When you've got one or the other, you can maybe make some tweaks. But when you need to do two, I can't imagine leading up to that game, it must be really difficult how he sets up. But yeah, no, I don't know if anyone else thought that. But, you know, the formation change with sort of... It kind of changed with and without the ball. We looked a lot more solid. Yeah. Dykes dropped back in, which I thought was great because he works much harder in that 10 than anyone else. So he's always, you know, he's always working hard, and he can link up the play better by winning headers and knocking balls on. When he's the furthest forward winning headers, you rely on someone to be fast, do you know what I mean, to get in behind him. But if he's already deeper, you've got Armstrong behind. I think that worked really well as well. And I actually think Cardiff weren't prepared for that.
No, they probably, they probably thought, great, we are playing well. Every Tom, Dick and Harry wanted to say we're the worst team in the league last week. probably even we said it. Clive even mentioned he was like, we look like a really poor League One team, which, yeah, wasn't wrong last week, but he tweaked a lot of stuff. It's interesting just you bringing up exactly what you're saying there, Ben. Everybody remembers, like, when we were really rubbish defensively under Warburton, what did he do? He went three at the back. Suddenly then, like, we looked more solid, and yet we could still do things. So it's interesting how we kind of flip between these formations. Suddenly you go three at the back, you look a lot more solid. If you think Kakai, put him in his best position. Chair was in a better position for him, kind of more of a roaming role, at least able to get on the ball more. The point you make about Dykes drops in, but then how do you manage to be defensively solid and still have an attacking threat? Well, the answer is pace. Pretty much every podcast we talked about on last season, we were like, what are we missing? We're missing pace. We had two rapid players there on Saturday starting. That gives you an attacking threat.
Well, I want to come in with my first, like, this is my only little bit of negative. I want to get it done, dusted, so I can keep the positive going. So I want to get the negative out of the way first and then go back to being positive.
Why didn't you end on the negative? Well, carry on. Go on,
so, well, because my negative is about how Cardiff played, actually. And I was so shocked at how awful Cardiff were for the first half that actually it made us look a little bit better than we maybe were. Because we still weren't at our fluid best. Like, yeah, but Cardiff was so terrible. But I part of me feels like they didn't watch our highlights against Watford. They didn't have anyone checking the game out because they did nothing that Watford did against us. Do you know what I mean? So it kind of their tactics and their system kind of played into our hands. And it felt that the game was always comfortable in that first half. But like you said, I'm being positive. It was down to us. The tactics were spot on. That's it. My leg is gone. So, yeah. I just kind of felt that, like we said, like everyone seemed to be playing in a more natural way against Cardiff. Like we said, Ozzie was in that kind of going back into that back three, which made him more comfortable. We had Cook, an actual proper centre-back, there organising the defence, a leader on the pitch, makes a massive difference. Like we had Smith down the wing was unbelievable. That first half especially, he caused Cardiff so many problems. Like there were so many positives to take from the game.
I think a lot of that is down to the formation, because I think at Watford, it was that one pass that was dealing us over every single time, wasn't it? That where more box was, for example, against Watford, it was that area. And I think that formation change completely cut out that option for Cardiff. And I think they probably come into it thinking that it wouldn't be much different. But, you know, credit to, I think, do you know what? There's not a single person that I could have said didn't really do that well other than Adoma, but sorry. I think the back five has always and will always be better when you haven't got a particularly strong defence. And I think we played to everyone's strengths. Ozzie is genuinely not a bad player in a back five. I think Morgan Fox is excellent. I think Steve Cook solidified it. I thought Dazelle looked miles better when he had that more support behind him as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this all later because I've got a different view on him, but we're in the pod now.
Positive.
Ollie, Armstrong loving all over up the R's. Obviously, we're all delighted that he scored his goal. I mean, I don't think anyone would have wanted anyone else to score. And I've watched the video on repeat all weekend. I don't know what Addy's interview. but let's hope this is the start of... He terrorised their defence, didn't he? I don't even think he was at full... I still think he was a bit nervous, and I still think he was a bit weary and a bit like wasn't. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he was full Armstrong at any point, really.
How can you say he was nervous when the composure for the second goal? Like, he didn't panic. He got in the box. He completely stopped the defender, and he took like that. Well, it felt like about 20 seconds. It wasn't. It was about 2 or 3 seconds. Composure. Yeah, picked the perfect pass. Powell bangs it in. Like, how can you say he was nervous? Like, he looked like a seasoned pro there.
Yeah, there, but he's just scored a goal, right? He's having a good game, right? The nerves have gone, right, by that point. You get him doing... He wouldn't be doing that in the first 10 minutes. But that's what I'm saying, right? Now he's got that goal and he's got that really good half in him and he's, you know, that's what you're going to get. That's what he can do. That's what he can always do.
That's what I was going to say. I think, actually, you know, despite people saying, oh, it's only one goal, it's one goal. It's not. That is the confidence boost that he needed. You know, that goal is what propelled him on forward into the second half. I don't think he would have, you know, I don't think he would have had the confidence to take on that defender, hold it off and wait for Powell if he hadn't got that goal. This genuinely, and you know, obviously I love him. I've been tweeting it every 5 minutes, but, you know, if he has that confidence in him, he could be serious this season. We talk about raw. If that goal propels him on, he could seriously cause issues, because down that wing, he was running that O'Dowda about like he was a school kid. It was absolutely crazy. He's a special. And this interview, I mean, we could just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the point on that breakaway, like you're saying, the confidence from the goal meant he didn't like get past the defender. And he's like, right, I'm going to shoot from any silly angle here because I'm desperate for that goal. He was then like, okay, I've got, obviously he doesn't process this in the moment, think, oh, I've already scored, so I won't shoot here. But yeah, the maturity, that bit, he obviously had an incident maybe 5 minutes before that, I think, where he took a shot where he probably shouldn't have done. I think Chair said something to him like, look, just keep the ball moving, too far out, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think all of us who were watching that, when he was over the ball, were like, just find the right pass. And then from the angle you had on the camera, it never looked like there was a pass on. You could only see Dykes.
Right.
He lays the ball across and you're thinking, right, someone has to be there because that's a perfect cutback. And then Kenny Powell was.
I thought it was Chair. When I was watching it live, I thought it's... Yeah.
Yeah. But... Logical for him to be bombing forward, to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah. You said you watched the video, Chris, about how far and quick... where he'd come from. It didn't feel like, someone said, it didn't feel that long, did it? But actually, it was quite a long time that he held on to the ball.
Yeah, and there was I can't remember the account, but someone took the two goals from a Cardiff vlogger who was behind that goal that we were attacking in the second half. And yeah, if you, I can try and find the video so the pod account can tweet it out later. But the just kind of keep your eye on Kenneth Powell. Because he sort of comes out of nowhere. The defender has to come across to Dykes, leaves Powell wide open. But that's what we need. Like, we can't just be like, okay, Armstrong's running with the ball. We're 1-0 up. Okay, cool. Well, we'll let him do that and the rest of us will stay solid. No, you need to, like, the right people need to be pushing on. But again, kind of go back to Powell's playing left wing back. He has the confidence to bomb on, knowing he's got more cover at the back, etc.
See, it was such a contrast to Powell at Watford, because he didn't seem to have any of that confidence to kind of take a man on or get upfield or anything.
Yeah.
So like we said, like the formation change freed him up that little bit to be able to go, I'm joining the attack. I'm getting up there. I'm going to make up the numbers.
Yeah, I think he got it wrong, didn't he, at Watford, Gareth Ainsworth. I don't know whether in-house as well something happened, but definitely the structure and how we set up was really poor. And I think he knew he had to do something. I think the problem is we all want him to do well, don't we? We want him to win. I was delighted for him on Saturday, getting the result and him having a positive formation change. It would be easy for him just to keep plugging away at what he wants us to do, right? And trying to make us play the way what he's been trying to do, I guess, for the past sort of 3 or 4 months. So for him to completely change it and for it to work. It's frustrating though how we were still hanging on at the end. You know what I mean? Considering how well we played for 75 minutes.
I think the problem was, we put everything into that first 70, 75 minutes. And I think that they were just knackered. And this new extra time thing is just becoming a bit of a joke.
There was never 10 minutes.
No, 10 minutes is extreme. Like, okay, there's like stoppages for a few subs. I don't remember us celebrating the goal for that long. Like, it's like these players. As much as like they used to play in 90 minutes with these breaks in it, they're now adding 5 minutes at halftime, 10 minutes, like adding 15 to 20 minutes on a game. It's like they're playing extra time every week. It's only going to be detrimental for the players and the game in the long run.
Yeah, it's a strange rule. And ultimately, like, that's... And obviously, we can't complain because there will be times where that extra 10 minutes will be the reason why we get an equaliser or we get a winner. But at the same time, you know, where they found 10 minutes from is beyond me. And had we have conceded and taken a draw, we'd all be furious because ultimately there was not 10 minutes. he pulled that straight out of something and it weren't real. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, in these first few weeks, every game will be that number to the extreme, to then try and find like a sort of happy medium where it's like, okay, 6 becomes the new 4 minutes added on, and like that number will decrease, because obviously they want it to be like, look, if you waste time, or if we feel like you're wasting time, which honestly I didn't think. I thought Begovic could have taken way longer on goal kicks and all that stuff. Obviously he knows now there's no advantage to doing that, so I'm not, it's a waste of time.
I think it's this rule change, the thing that annoys me the most is that teams that have got a big squad of quality players are always going to have the advantage. Because there was like Burnley last year, we had to really shithouse that to get that result, to keep us up. And if that had been this rule change was last year, we would have played about 20, 30 minutes extra time because of how often we were like kicking the ball out and time wasted and doing everything. But that's how you sometimes win a game. If you can't beat the team at football, actually playing it on the deck and actually outplaying a team, you have to find other ways to win games. It's making it now you can't do that.
I saw the stat though that there's not been, in the first two games of the season, in the 90th minute, there was hardly any difference in 90 minute goals from last season, just first two games. I mean, look, I'm not set. What I mean is that if you can still do a bit of shouser, even like a bit of time wasted, get into the 90th minute, I know that the minutes will be high, right? But in the 90th minute, teams are panicking, aren't they? Not taking that extra pass, they're lobbing it in the box and stuff like that. What kind of stuff you want if there's that many minutes and you've been doing that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think the only thing that worries me about is there are going to be teams, you know, like Middlesbrough, like Southampton, Leeds, all these clubs that are going to, by the end of the transfer window, they're going to have these stacked squads. And when it's 10 minutes at a time, they'll have two subs left and they'll bring on two pacey wingers and they'll absolutely obliterate the likes of like Adoma, etc., who's played a full game, for example. It's, I mean, but we can't complain. It could work in our favour and against it. It's how it is.
Just one quick one, lads. I don't know if anyone else wanted to pick up on it and talk about it, but I know it's one thing in Ainsworth's interview at the end was the Cook influence and what he was doing in the dressing room and talking, and he was the vocal one. He's only been there for 2 days. So to do that, it kind of feels like I get what he's trying to do in relation to the experienced heads in there. You've got Box, you've got Begovic, you've got Colback, all sort of know each other as well. They've always got that relationship. Kind of feels a lot better from a season pro perspective than last season already. Obviously, we might, I don't know, maybe lacking a little bit more quality than last season in relation to players, but that experience definitely seems to be evident. I don't know anyone else's views.
Yeah, I think we, if anything, you look at the players that we have lost, I do think in general we have lacked experience until we've had someone like that come in. I mean, you look at Cook, he's had however many Premier League games, Championship games. We haven't got many players. Stefan Johansson was that player for us. And ultimately, you look at the outfield, and without Begovic, it was really only Morgan Fox that's got that experience, isn't it? So I think Ainsworth have probably got him in and said, make your name evident from the second you get in.
It's like, I get it, but like we're saying, like, Chair's played however many seasons now at Championship level, Dykes has, like, there's other players in this squad that have made appearances, like we just lack actual characters of leadership, not so much. Like, we've got teams, like, players that have played numerous games, internationals, everything. So it was just more the personality, isn't it?
Yeah, age as well. Like, Chair and Dykes both got 25, 27, something like that. I suppose having someone in the 30s.
It's what you do, though, isn't it? Like, you know, Chair's not going to lift you up in the 90th, you know, in the 80th minute and tell everyone to cheer everyone up and get everyone going or shouting in the dressing room. I don't know. I can't imagine him doing that. You know, as much as he might be one of those leaders on the pitch, maybe with his skill and ability, I don't know. I always feel like you still need a bit more as a character. I don't know, though.
I think he'd still say stuff, but it's not the same level. Going back to the kind of, it's your character and your personal traits over age. And I'm going to bring up like one of the best players in the world here, but like Jude Bellingham, everybody who talks about him says he already has all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like we're looking at, I mean, in the World Cup, you could see he is the future England captain, and you could see that at like 19 years old. Now that's one individual. I'm not saying right, Armstrong, you've suddenly got to look like that, but it yeah, age doesn't kind of determine that. But I think we knew that last season, didn't we? We were like, where are the characters? Where is the leadership in this whole squad? So Ainsworth would have seen the same thing as soon as he walked in the door. Right, who are these people that I can fully get on board? Who are the... I mean, how often do we talk back to that, like, 2014? Right, you've got, like, Bertrand, Rowlands, Gallen, etc. We're going, we need players like that. Or we need a Clinton Hill. We need a Sean Derry. So we're going back to 2004 and 2011 to go, those are the kind of people we need. Now, yeah, Cook's been here one game, done great. Not saying he's going to be like a Clint Hill, but from the outside, you'd be like, he looks a good bet to be that kind of person. And that's why when you are like, we're going to finish bottom six still. This is a positive pod. That's where we're going to finish. But there are teams in this league that stay up because they have that, those kind of traits. They can work out how to win games. They can do enough, but they have the kind of the intangibles on the football pitch to get through.
Yeah, Warnock teams.
Yeah. I mean, Rob Dickey would have wanted to play along. What I mean is Fox was much better on Saturday, I think, because he's got someone like Cook right next to him. Rather, do you know what I mean? Someone who could orchestrate the defence. Same with all five of the defence, really. But I think that we'll be better with him there. And we could have done with him sort of the end of last season, a figure like that in the centre half, because I don't know what happened to Balogun. He just sort of fell to pieces, didn't he?
Yeah, twat.
It's true, but I'd imagine he was doing that at the start of the season under Beal, right? He was doing that. He was being that type of character, you know, but I don't know what happened. You know, loads happened, I guess, but we weren't too well last season too much.
Yeah. Doug?
No, I was just going to say, obviously, like we said last season how many times that none of our centre-backs were organisers, were leaders. Obviously, with mm-hmm. Balogun missing so much of the season. Like, Jimmy Dunn doesn't seem to have that. Dickey didn't seem to have that. Clark Salter was never there. So we didn't have a Steve Cook kind of presence at the back to be, look, there's your man, there's your man. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's good to have him in. I just hope that not all our signings are 32-year-olds plus.
it's because it needs to be more than just your own game, which is where Jimmy Dunn falls down. He's got all the right characteristics, I think, to be a captain or to be somewhat of a leader, but I always feel like he needs to concentrate on his own game so much that he can't be worried about everyone else. I don't know. I think if he lacks a bit of concentration here and there because he's focusing on, I don't know, you might not get the best Jimmy Dunn, but he's obviously out now for a few months, which I think we all do for quite a while.
Yeah, very unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, last season, if we think how poor Rob Dickey was, that's going to impact Dunn's performance because he's always panicking, basically. God, this guy next to me, like, is a mistake waiting to happen at the moment. I've got to have half my eye over here in terms of what Dickey's got going on. And like you said, therefore doesn't concentrate on his own game. So in theory, I feel he would have, like, when he's fit and playing, he'll look a lot better alongside Cook than he has done before because he's got someone solid next to him. We'll keep talking to him and he doesn't need to worry that Cook's going to have, slip over and stumble on the ball or whatever.
Don't jinx him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
When you think of, you know, I know it's a big ask, but when Clark Salter is fit and Dunn's fit, you look at that back line and actually it looks pretty solid at the end of the day. We need a right back ultimately, but you look at the defenders that we have, like Cook, fit Cook, Dunn, Clark Salter, Fox, Powell, that's not bad at championship level at all. But obviously, you know, one gets fit, the other gets injured. So it'll probably be three of them fit all season, the rest of them out.
I read a really interesting tweet, actually, and I didn't completely agree with it, but I did to a certain extent, was actually, if you look, the reason why we are thinking the way we are is because we've had two horrendous defeats, right? A really poor pre-season relation to results. But if you look man for man, we're still missing a couple, which is where I disagree, but we could end up at the end of August with a better team. If you look at it, like Begovic, Dieng, You know, we really, you know, Cook in the centre field instead of Balogun. You know, we need a right back, agree, Ollie. But Colback, I think, is going to be much better in that centre field. I know we missed Tim, but he was never really that type of player. But I think, you know, I don't know. I think Smith could surprise us. Ainsworth told us he would, and he could.
The thing is, I get your point, but based on pure ability-wise, obviously going forward last year, he had Ilias, Chrissy Willock, Tyler Roberts on ability, not fitness, Jamal Lowe. Like, we had those kind of established names that would put like fear into any most defenders. At the minute, we're potentially losing Chrissy Willock. We could still lose Ilias, and depending on who we get in to replace them, our front four, five is Dykes, Armstrong, Kelman, Smith. Like, that doesn't fill me with massive confidence if that's what we're left with.
Well, Kelman's off, isn't he, likely?
Yeah, I think it will look different. My point is, it will look slightly different come the end of August. Appreciate now that maybe we are light in a few areas. I think everyone knows that, but we don't have any funds to get anyone in. And we're relying heavily on Chris Willock and or someone else leaving, right? I think there's, I don't know whether he was or wasn't injured. You know, apparently he was. I don't know. But
there's no chance Chrissy Willock was injured.
No, but I don't blame, if it's the club's decision, which I think it would have been, it wouldn't have been his decision. But he's one of our assets that we're probably going to sell. And if the rumours be believed that it's 1.52 million odd that we could get for him, don't risk him.
Picture
the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Get that, but why don't the club be transparent about it? It's not doesn't give us a tactical advantage him not playing. So why aren't they like clear and obvious and just say, look, we've had a bid from an unnamed club, so we've left Chrissy out of the squad this weekend because his head's been turned.
You don't have to hear that though, do you?
He's picked up a knock. And then literally the same day, there's it's leaked that we've had, there's a bid been accepted for him, or there's a bid coming in for him, whatever. Like, it's just, why can't they just tell us the truth? Like, it's they're getting advantage from him playing.
That's what they did with Foreno, didn't they? The Wickham boss said in his interview that that when we bid for Foreno, that his head's been turned, so he wasn't involved. So, I mean, that if we had that, the way that they did, I think there would be more transparency. But ultimately, you know, we don't know what the situation is. We could be all overreacting. He's actually injured and he might sign a new contract, but I doubt it. it's dodgy to assume, isn't it? But when a QPR transparent.
Chris, what do you think, mate? What's your view?
Didn't really have a problem with it, to be honest. Modern football, it doesn't. I know you bring up the Foreno example. I just think that's sort of 1 in 1,000. The possible, I guess, negatives of the club coming back. Basically, let's say they're in negotiation about a fee, right? If we then put out our basically words to that extent, we're in negotiation and he's not in the right headspace. There's an element to which is that puts Borough in a stronger position, or whoever's bidding for him, that suddenly we could potentially get less money, less, just a worse position in terms of the negotiation for me. Like, we didn't, the way we played Saturday, didn't miss him. The game could have been completely different, but I think it's, Devers really felt like Ainsworth has faith in him, either from a fitness point of view or like a buy-in mentality. So if you don't have that, there's an element to which, not going to say he's the scapegoat, I kind of want to go down that path, that Ainsworth almost needs to identify someone and go, look, he's got amazing talent in this team, but we're in a position where we have to sell, one, but two, if he's not going to buy into everything I want you lot to do, then you're not going to play for me. And that's why he was brought on for a minute at Watford to send I think it's a bit of a pathetic message, to be honest, but that's the kind of thing managers have to do. So everybody else is like, shit, that can happen to Chris Willock, like the second best player in this squad.
Dave Mack said on Twitter that he was going to play Saturday. That was the plan a week.
Versus Cardiff.
He was going to play. He was supposed to play. And he is injured and he was supposed to play. Now, which makes me think then that what was the plan? The plan wasn't for Dykes to drop deeper. It was for Willock to, what was he going to, do you know what I mean? Like, was he going to play where Armstrong, where Dykes was, and Dykes going to play where Armstrong? Do you know what I mean? How was that going to, because to me, in the formation that we set up, I don't see how Chris Willock fits in that.
It was difficult. I think that part of the cynic in me wants to think that there was somebody in the club saying, we've had a massive backlash from the fans from this horrendous Watford result. You've got to start Chrissy Willock next game. All the fans are fuming. He's not featured. We need to try and get him in the team. He's one of our best players. It kind of feels there was that conversation had at the club between someone and Ainsworth, in my opinion.
If that kind of thing happens at our club, we've got serious issues, though. Beyond what we'd actually do have. Because if people are that's going back to the Fernandez, okay, cool, what are QPR Twitter saying about who I should bring in as manager? Cool, I'll do that. we ultimately, whether you accept it or not, to go, Angel, you've got control over everything here. No one behind the scenes is going to tell you who you shouldn't be playing, blah-de-blah. You spoke about it last week, but if you think everything we did in pre-season, Willock's fitness is great, playing him every game. Shop window, positive talk. This guy is a great player. He's going to get it back to where he needs to be. So any interested party, you're going to have to pay a decent fee, not £500,000 because actually he's crocked and we don't really want him anymore. You've got to build up your asset.
If a bid of 1.52 million comes in, you sell, right? You have to.
No.
With his contract situation,
I understand why, but if we keep him until January, and even if he doesn't particularly do anything too great, if he gets a couple of goals come January, it might be useful to us. 1.5 million to me, just, I understand the importance for this kind of money, but I wouldn't accept anything less than three. It's profit, but I just think it could work in our favour if we did keep him. But we don't know because he hasn't played. You know, if he ends up playing against Norwich tomorrow and he puts in a good little performance, well, and we see that he wants to play, he wants to do well, then I think we should reconsider that. But again, we don't know what's going on. As far as I'm aware, he's off. But 2 million, I can't go. It's 2 million, and it's not pocket change. So,
but then let's say we keep him January. Like you say, let's say he's been a sort of bit part player, not like a permanent starter. He's got a few goals. We've kind of been cool. He's not going to sign a new deal. We're in an Asai Samuel situation where we're sort of desperate for someone to give us £300,000 to get anything for him.
I just think it's a gamble that might be worth taking.
I think it's like, if he didn't have the injury record, I'd agree with you, Wally. But the fact that he's so unreliable, in the sense that his hamstring could go at any moment, I would just take the money and run.
I get what you're saying though, Wally, to a degree, is that he could, if on board and on form, he could easily score another 10, 12 goals a season and keep us up. And yes, we lose him for free, but he will stay up. Because if he does do that, he's definitely not going in January, right? Because why would he? Right, he'll wait until the summer where he get a bigger deal, bigger club, continue his form. He's not going to... Do you know what I mean? He wouldn't... The better he does, the more likely he goes for a free, I think.
Yeah, it's hard really, isn't it? Because, there's two positive scenarios. One, the positive is that he keeps us up. The other positive being that we managed to somehow convince him to sign an extension for a year and then sell him for more.
It won't happen, mate.
It won't happen, but that's the only other positive. Or we just get a couple of mil for him, which we won't. People seem to think if we get a couple of mil, we reinvest it. We won't. This is, we're coming to the end of an FFP cycle. The more money we get and don't spend, the better. So I don't know. It's a mess at the moment.
It's the problem you've got is I think. It's not so much will it go in, it is will it go in, but it's also you get a bid for chair in the last few days of the window, and then you're at real panic stations over, I think, because, well,
that,
you'd like
that
to
is,
think...
But where you're in a much better bargaining position if you've already sold Willock for two. If someone let's say we don't sell Willock, Borough come in this week, 2 mil, we go, nah. And they go, fine, we'll move on to somebody else because we've got loads of money and we weren't sure about his fitness. Then everybody knows we've got financial problems and we've got to sell someone. So Leicester come in on the last day being like, oh, here's 3.5 mil for Ilias Chair. We know he's worth potentially double than that, 5, 6, but we know you're screwed. Then we'd be like, as a business, we'd have to take it, I think, that kind of money.
I think that would be the case if we hadn't lost Senny and Dickie at the start of the window. I don't feel like we're in the predicament of, oh, we have to accept anything like that. I feel like with them going, it's given us a little bit of a wiggle room because we've rejected a lower bid, didn't we, for Willock from another club. So we can't...
We need to make as much money as possible this window. Did you listen to Clive last week? We have to.
It's not selling them at the cheap budget price, is it? We're not so desperate. We've got to accept the bare minimum for them.
No, but if you're Borough, if I'm Borough, I'm just waiting until the end of the window to see what I can get Willock for. You know what I can say with Chair. These clubs will probably be waiting. The reality is, we need to sell. Right,
we need Eze to sell.
Spurs coming for Eze.
So we will do, and that's the reality, right? We're not like it, and we can hold out for as much as possible. But actually, the more we hold out, the poorer position we're in come the end of the window, I think. So I don't know. It's all nothing for us to worry about, I guess. But I think the point is, we're going to sell one, if not two, of these. Of the players, I think, but it all depends on who's interested and who isn't, right? But if we don't sell any of them, I don't know who else we're going to bring in. It's going to be cheap loans for the Prem youngsters, you know, like that Fulham lad we've currently acquired. Cheap loans is all we can afford at the moment.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see if Southampton come in for any of our players once obviously Ward-Prowse is gone, that Lavea is going.
I don't think they will. I think it's the opposite. I think it does the opposite. The more money they get, the less chance they're going to probably buy our players, I think.
But they might want to reinvest that money in a few players and build up a squad that's going to then challenge for the league. So they might think, well, Ilias Chair, he's established in this level. He's potentially okay on set pieces.
Ilias Chair, I don't know what your views are. He had a better game on Saturday. He just doesn't look himself, though, does he? I don't know, it's just me, just his vibes, it's just his, you know, he puts it in, he's a hard worker, he's good, he's, you know, as good as player as we've got, I think, talent-wise, well, definitely. I don't know if anyone else is picking up the vibes, I feel like he knows.
He's off, I think he's gone, to be honest, and I think he probably knows that as well. I think Gareth's probably potentially told him, like, if a bid does come in, it will be likely that we accept it, and, you know, he's been at this club a long time, and I think... the loyalty he's shown to us is great enough, but I think he's earned his move. And you know, if we get 5-6 million for him, we thank him for his efforts and cheerio. I think maybe he might be in a situation where he doesn't know where his future lies. There's talks of moves abroad. There's talks of, you know, Leicester. I think, you know, if I was, you know, at Tesco's and I heard that Sainsbury's and Asda were interested in me, I think it would turn my head as well. Do you know what I mean? So. I can understand.
What supermarket at QPR?
In Aldi, farm food.
I don't know. We're like Happy Shopper, though, aren't we?
Oh dear.
But if he is in that position, then he'll always keep putting the effort in. Like, and that I kind of feel that's all we can ask. If he's still
absolutely
being like great around the training ground, like pre-game, during games. Still showing his quality, even in away games where we're not going to have a lot of the ball and he's not going to be getting 40, 50 touches a game, but will do the job that he needs to do, then great. Like, that's what we require. But then it's up to, if he then does go, someone else to fill that void. And that's the concern, isn't it? If, when we were to get to that position.
Any more, like, on Saturday, anything else anyone noticed? Any more positives?
We've barely touched on Paul Smith and
the amazing
work rate for the setup for the Armstrong goal. But that wasn't the first time he'd done that. He terrorised their left back all for the first half, especially. He was constant threat for us down that right hand side.
Because what you could do is, what the good thing about that, playing that formation with him there, is that Kekai can move over quite quickly, and like that move over is quite, it feels quite smooth. Like him getting further forward and us moving over. So that's why I think that side works really well. But his pace, isn't it? We always say it. I don't know, like, especially away from home, pace just kills us every time we play against it.
Yeah. Like, the goal was just him chasing down like a ball. Like, it was normally you wouldn't even think any of our players would chase that down. He gambled that the defender was going to like dally on it, got in, got it, and got the goal. Well, got the assist. But I saw a heat map for him, and he was literally on the like sideline. He's hugged that hole, the side of the pitch. Like, he's been as wide as possible the whole game, which I think we haven't had recently. Like, the last few seasons, we've been quite narrow, quite compact, haven't we?
Yeah, we've generally relied on our fullbacks, haven't we, to push on. The thing I wanted to bring up is the fact that, obviously, a win, amazing. The fact that it was a win against, I've almost mentally disregarded the table, and there's a table of six teams that we've just got to beat three of them. Like, so these are the top six in terms of like relegation odds: Plymouth, Rotherham, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday, Cardiff, and us. If we can get points off those teams away, or at least if you can get 3 points versus each of them across the season, then that obviously gives you a building block, and it's kind of like, right, the teams who are going to be around us and the other poor teams, do well against them as a kind of starting block, and then we'll see how we do against other teams. But don't want to kind of be in a position where we're 35 games in and being like, God, we lost, we've got 1 point versus Rotherham and Huddersfield did us again, like every season. You can beat the other basically crap teams, then
be grateful Peterborough in there. I've put Plymouth top half.
I don't understand their odds. They won't be in this.
Yeah, they've made some good signings.
Yeah,
It's that bounce, isn't it? You always, at least two of the three that come up always carry on that winning mentality, don't they? I think Sheffield Wednesday will struggle.
I think the funny thing is everyone forgets Plymouth won the league. Well, Plymouth won League One.
Yeah.
Like, everyone raves about Ipswich, but Plymouth were the team who actually won the league.
And they look quality Ipswich as well, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a tough game on Saturday.
It's like the number one team I would not want to play after a positive performance and a positive mentality, because now we are playing... So statistically, they were the best League One team ever, despite the fact they didn't win the league. Their goal difference was the second. Did I, mate? Heard it on a betting podcast. They were just talking about how amazing Ipswich were. Their goal difference was only second in the whole country to Man City, and that might have been across Europe as well, from memory. It'd be basically based on their XG, like chances created, their... XG against, like, they're ridiculously good defensively. And wait till people realise that it's Massimo Luongo leading their midfield.
They love him there.
And Don Ball coming off the bench. Well, if he ever gets minutes, but he's still there.
But, and the thing is, you know, like, it's our first home league game of the season. We've just come in off the bounce of the Cardiff game. You know, everyone's going to be there at the ground, absolutely buzzing. 5 minutes in, we're going to go 1-0 down. You said to keep smiling.
true. Quickly then, lads, the cup game on Wednesday before then. I for one don't want to see anybody playing me. I know we want a nice cup run, it'd be nice, but I can't be bothered with any more injuries. I'm getting fed up with it. Like, just rest some of these. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to see Cook, Box.
When we spoke to Gareth before the start of the season, he said he's going to take the cup seriously this year. I'm hoping he's changed his mind. don't do it.
He spoke to West London Sport though? Today and basically said along the lines of, oh, I would like to have a go in them, but the league comes first and I've got to be sensible. Words to that effect. Like I said to you boys earlier today, we talk about how our, let's say, youth players or those who are on the fringe don't get opportunities, or we don't do the right loans to give them minutes. And then they suddenly, like, Gubbins gets thrown in completely at the deep end against Watford. We kind of know he's not good enough, but he's just a centre-back, so he has to play. These are the games you play him in. You play him 90 minutes and you go, right, yeah, we're playing another championship team who will rotate as well, but give him experience. So you play Walsh in goal, he'll probably, I don't know, if you play Archer, but I just don't really see how that benefits him as an individual. Like, give Walsh 90 minutes, give Gubbins 90 minutes, Drew 90 minutes, Duke McKenna, Taylor Richard to play, Dixon Bonner.
If it may, you get annihilated if you do that.
Play, but... Because you said don't play anyone.
I know. But he won't. You can't not do that. My point was a bit tongue-in-cheek. Like, I want to do that, but, you've got... If you do that and you go and lose 5 or 6-0, you're back in the same place again. This is the other challenge that he's got, isn't it? Because it's a mentality thing. We're trying to shift that, but I get it that we just don't have a squad.
Colback's got to start, hasn't he? Surely you've got to give Colback 60 minutes on Wednesday night.
He needs
to play, doesn't he? He needs to play. You might as well start him and give him the hour. And... Yeah. Sorry, Ollie, mate.
No, I was agreeing with you. I agree. Colback's got to play. Richards as well.
Yeah. I think we'll see Richards. I think we'll see...
Who will play up front? Kilman?
I fucking hope not.
There was rumours that he was at another... Was it Orient's game or something? Orient, yeah. He was injured and he went there. I don't know. But,
Is that him just sulking that he wasn't picked for the weekend? Because he was dropped?
Well, Ainsworth did him no favours, I don't think. But no, I mean, he was like a deer in the headlights. We've already spoken about it at Watford. It's a bit unfair for him when it first game of the season, number 10 role. it was a bit difficult for him. I don't know, who else can you play, really? This is how light the squad is.
As much as I'd want Armstrong to play to keep that run going, I'd rather he didn't. I'd rather Dykes played.
Yeah.
I'd rather save Armstrong for the weekend. He needs to have that bit of game management where he's not playing every single game.
He does. But he does need his... I know, I'm a bit like... He needs minutes and God, I don't know. It's one of them, isn't it? I feel like...
I'm sure there's a medical professional at the club who's like, look, he can't... Like, he's got 20 minutes on him on Tuesday compared to he's got 75 on Saturday if you keep him, that kind of...
But this is the thing, like, this is what we had the whole of last season with him. Like, he'd come in, do his cameo, we'd be like, oh, look, he looks decent. Like, why isn't he getting more games? And then you go missing for 3 or 4 games.
And yeah. Because we'd rest him or not play him again, then bring him in, and then he's explosive again, and he's, I don't know, I just feel like, I'm no expert.
It's difficult because he's a young lad, but he's a big lad. So they've got to manage him because he, like you said, he is explosive. That's where he's more likely to do hamstrings, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
Did Duke McKenna be a good one? I want to see him properly in a proper competitive game because he did look all right at Watford. I think Watford have completely slowed the, put the pedal off.
Do you reckon Colley will get a game? He was on the bench for Cardiff. Do you reckon he might get some minutes? He's looked impressive.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
I mean, this is the one where you... I know I've kind of reeled off all the like younger players or fringe players you'd play. If you want to, let's say, demonstrate you have a clearer path to the first team, if it's not in the first round League Cup game, I just don't really understand where it is. There aren't going to be many league games where we're like, oh, we're in a pretty comfortable position now. Yeah. We can give minutes here to anybody.
Let's have a couple of academy players on the bench just in case we're 3-0 up at half time.
Yeah, but there'd be 25 minutes added on, and then we wouldn't be able to bring them on anyway.
I would say it's sort of fit, but I don't know. He's a bit like Tyler Roberts. You see, he's out for another month.
Yeah, and I saw all the Birmingham fans absolutely loving Ethan Laird, who's traditionally amazing in sort of August and September. We'll see kind of what everybody thinks about him in sort of November time.
It's getting cold.
Yeah.
Right, lads, what do we reckon then quickly? Do we reckon two games? You've got Ipswich, Norwich, any this new air of confidence?
I think we might do over Norwich. I think we might beat them. They looked really good against Southampton at the weekend, but I have a feeling they might have seen that and rest a few players. I reckon we might scrape maybe on... I just think we might get away with it. Ipswich, I think we'll lose, but I'll take a point. One of your...
I reckon we're going to make too many changes on Wednesday and we'll lose. And I can't see us getting a result against Ipswich, as hard as it is to say after the Cardiff game. I just feel they're going to be at a different level to Cardiff were. And I just think we're going to struggle.
Yeah, I think we'll lose both, to be honest, in different manners. Ipswich are... they're already one of the best teams in this league. Like, I kind of don't want to have this ultimate defeatist attitude, but like, I'm not going to judge this team, QPR, against Ipswich at home, like, or Leicester at home. Like, those to me are that sort of turn up not expecting anything, and we're going to see a great team against us. Just try, just basically 25 minutes where you don't concede. And like, could we possibly score a second half goal at the loft? Like,
whilst I agree, Chris, I just at home form, that's another challenge that Gareth's got. Is trying to, I mean, he's got to end this run. I don't know where it's, you know, do you know what I mean? What is it, one win in 20 games at home?
Is it six goals at the loft all season?
You know, it's something we've got to get over, really. We've got to nip that in the bud quickly. We can't let that drag on.
We won one game at home in 2023, haven't we? That was Watford.
It's crazy, mate. It's crazy.
And before that, it was positive. A game in October.
Yeah. So I think we've got to win. I think we can. There's no reason we can't. I know Ipswich look good, but I still don't, you know, take a draw. But I still think we've got a chance.
And I'd bite someone's hand off for a draw right now. But
I'm going with the attitude of, if I think we're going to lose and then we get a draw or a win, I'm absolutely over the moon because I wasn't expecting it. Whereas if we do lose, I kind of thought that was going to happen anyway, so my mood doesn't get any lower.
Oh, mine does. Don't know about anyone else. All right, lads, cool. Thanks for coming on. A bit more of a positive pod. Don't try to ruin it at times, but we stayed on course. we'll catch up next week. Hopefully we'll have a good couple of results. And thanks for everyone continuing to listen. You are.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.